Hey, Immigrantly family, welcome back. I am Sadia Khan, your host. There's a specific kind of courage that doesn't make headlines. It's quieter than that. It's the courage of packing your life into suitcases, landing in a city in the middle of winter, and deciding that this is where you belong, even when nothing yet confirms that you do. I've been thinking about that kind of courage a lot lately, because it's at the heart of something I recently built. For those of you who don't know, Biot, Belong on Your Own Terms, is an empowerment app that is now live, and it has been a genuine labor of love to get here. As part of this next chapter, I've been doing something a little unconventional, reaching out to a small, very carefully chosen group of people, not influencers in the transactional sense, but real people whose lives and work actually reflect what Biot stands for, and inviting them to use it, to experience it honestly, to tell me what resonates and what still needs work. That kind of feedback from people who actually live these values is the only thing that makes something worth building in the first place. That process led me to today's guest. Our PR team connected us, and the moment I heard her story, I understood immediately why. My guest today is Laura Barucci, journalist, content creator, podcaster, and one of New York City's most trusted voices for anyone trying to figure out how to actually live here, not just survive.
I struggle because finding an apartment in New York is really, really hard. It's very expensive.
Especially as a foreigner, it's hard.
Exactly. So it was a very frustrating process. I remember
it's like
that
you don't exist on paper. You don't
exactly
exist.
Yeah, you can't. You have no credit.
She's a fellow immigrant from Brazil who arrived in this city in January 2014 and built something from nothing. An audience, a voice, a body of work that spans everything from what to wear in a New York winter to what it truly means to make a home in East Harlem, to quiet, stubborn act of learning French as a third language just because she wanted to. She's the host of Transplants, a podcast about women thriving in new roots abroad, and the writer behind The Tiny Apple, a newsletter about New York life, told with the kind of honesty that only comes from someone who chose this city fiercely and on purpose. And today, she is sitting right across the table from me in the studio, which still feels a little unreal, honestly, because her work has meant something to me, not just as a fellow immigrant, but as someone who believes that stories we tell about starting over are some of the most powerful ones we have. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Welcome to Immigrantly, Laura. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm a little nervous.
Why?
I don't know what to expect. Because when I ask, is there anything that I need to prepare for it? And you say no. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's like I don't like to give my guests questions because mm-hmm. I don't want them to come prepared.
I
want them to be spontaneous. I mm-hmm. want them to be themselves. So before we started recording, we were talking about Subway, right? I've been on Subway only once, but what I've realized is if I were to take Subway more, I would have such interesting stories. Like you get to know New York City at its core if you're taking subways. So I'm sure since you do it often, you have far more interesting stories than somebody like me.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's good. Sometimes the stories that you get by taking the subway are not the good ones. It's like people smelling and people eating food that is smelling and people listening to music or watching videos without like a headphone, a headset. And yeah, it's, but I like to people watch as well. And I love to see how the diversity, it makes me feel home.
Exactly. Like I say this often, New York is one place where you can hear people with different accents. And to your point, Laura, sure, sometimes subway can be annoying in some ways, but that's the human experience.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I was talking to somebody else the other day as well, and they said the same thing. They said you have, as a storyteller, sometimes it's important to be in the midst of all of it, right?
It's part of the soul of the city. It's part of the experience. I used to create content about like what to do in New York City, things to do. And I always said like, you have to take the subway because people from Brazil, they'll be like scared to take the subway. Not scared in terms of safety, but scared like, what if I get lost? I don't know how to take the subway. And I was like, it's part of the experience,
right,
even to get lost. And it's how you see, like, that's the real New York, because you have like the homeless people, you have like the finance bros, you have the students. I love it. Yeah. And you asked me about stories. I remember once that, I don't know, I was talking to someone, maybe my sister was here or a friend, and it was not the first time that someone approached me to ask me if I was speaking Russian. And I don't know if Portuguese sounds like Russian for people, but yeah, interesting.
What did you say?
I was like, no, it's Portuguese. And then you start to like talk about language, and I love it. Yeah, that's one story that I remember right now. And also some random encounters that you have with people that you know from social media or whatever. And then I remember that I knew this girl, and one day we just sit in front of each other like, oh my God, is that you? You know, like, yeah. And it's such a big city.
It is such a big city. And
what are the odds?
And yet it can be small. Mm-hmm. I remember this was a few years back. I interviewed Kareem Rama, who's become really big now.
Oh my God, I interviewed him
when he wasn't as big. And I remember talking to him about New York City. And he said something similar. It's a big city, but then you know everyone. It's as if you live in a smaller community, which is so incredible, right? Because when people think of New York City, they think of, as you said, finance bros, capitalism, 9-to-5 grind, but nobody talks about the community that it is. But let's talk about you.
Okay.
You came from Brazil.
Yes.
What brought you to New York?
Actually, well, it was my husband. At that time, he was my boyfriend. And like the short story is that he got a job here. He's from the tech scene. And that's how we got here. But the long story, it's a good one if you want me to share a little bit about
it. Let's do the long story.
Okay, so I never dreamed about living in the United States. When I visited New York City for the first time back in 2013, at that point, we were boyfriend, girlfriend, and we had a plan to live abroad at some point. But I always thought about Europe, you know, never thought about the United States, which is kind of odd. Because in South America, we are very like strongly influenced by the American culture, the North American culture. I grew up watching movies and cartoons. Everything at that time was from the United States, music. But I never had that dream. And even like go to Disney, I've been living here for over 12 years. I've never been there. And Sex and the City, the things that I used to watch. And then he was working for a company and he had a project here in New York.
And he was like, maybe you should get your tourist visa and come with me, because all you need to do is buy your tickets and then you can stay with me. And I'm going to spend a lot of money. And I was working for myself. I'm a journalist. And I was working with PR clients, social media clients. Okay, yeah, let's go to New York. And it was love at first sight when I got here. And I told him, like, you should get a job here. Because we knew, like, because he's in tech, and the chances to get a job at that time in tech were, like, pretty high. That's the thing about, like, being ignorant, quote unquote, because I didn't know anything about visas. It's pretty complicated to get a visa to move to the U.S. I was like, yeah, but you should try. And then if nothing works, we can think about our plan B. And at the same time, he was here for 3 weeks working for this client. And his colleague said, oh, do you want to know how is your resume looking for the American job market? You should change your LinkedIn location to New York City. Just like something naive. He was not like planning to do anything. But he got a lot of contacts from recruiters. I have told this story so many times, but I think it's a good one. Yeah, so he started to get messages from recruiters. And I was like, okay, you have to answer that because it's our chance. When he got back to Brazil, he started to answer. He was still like using Skype for the meetings. And every time that they got to the visa conversation, he was like, we're not sponsoring any visas right now. It's like, okay, maybe this is not going to happen. But there was one company that kept going. And at some point, they said, come to New York. We want to talk to you. We like you. And he was like, amazing. Oh, my God, this is happening. And then he was, I think it was like a Sunday. His flight was Sunday night. And on Sunday morning, he decided to text the recruiter. It's like, oh, my God, I'm so excited. And I'm so curious about the visa thing. What are you guys going to do about it? And the recruiter was like, what about the visa? What about it? I need a visa, I told you. And he was like, what? Because the thing is, he said that he needed a new visa. And the recruiter got that he needed like a visa renewal.
Oh, so they didn't know that he did not have
exactly.
a visa.
Yeah, so they canceled wow. everything. And I was like, okay, not happening anymore. And then I guess 3 weeks later, they got back to him like, hey, we really like to. We talked to the lawyers. We found this path to this visa. Are you still interested? And yeah, that's how we moved to New York.
So what visa did he come on?
It was the J-1 visa. And then 1 year and a half later, we went through the lottery and got the H-1B, which I believe it was the same one that you had it, right?
Yeah. So we came on F-1, F-2.
And then H-1.
Then H-1, H-4.
Uh-huh.
Then my husband's company applied for our green card. Mm-hmm. And during that time, he got a job offer from Google, but he couldn't switch because he wanted to keep the process going.
Oh.
So he had to decline that. And okay. It's so weird. There've been instances where he and I sit down and we talk about it and we're like, what if we didn't have this visa thing, right? And what if we were living in San Francisco or, you know, in a parallel universe, our lives would be different. And people don't realize, as you said, Laura, that visa dictates so much of what immigrants do. Even the delay in careers, women feeling economically invisible. As you said, you were a journalist in Brazil. I'm sure you were on dependent visa for a very long time.
Oh, yes, yes.
And you've talked about it, right? How did it feel to be financially dependent on somebody else?
It was awful. It was awful, and not because of him. Because he was always like supportive and it's like our money and everything. But I graduated from college. I got a great job. And then later I got my clients and I was like living by myself, paying my rent, saving a lot of money. And then I was here in New York and I couldn't work and I couldn't make money. And I wasn't used to that fact, to asking for money. I mean, only from my dad in the past. But even when I was going to college, my dad was paying for the tuition, but I was doing everything in my power to try to make money, like internships and then a job, and really like taking care of that money so I didn't have to ask for a lot of money from my dad. And it was very important for me, I guess, because I grew up watching my mom going through the same thing, because she decided to get married and she had me and then my sister. For you to have an idea, when I started college, going to college, she was graduating from college. She went to college when she was 37, after having my brother. And I would see her every day, like struggling, trying to like doing everything she could to make some money. And again, my dad was not a bad person, but she wanted like to buy her stuff, clothing for us. And, you know, so yeah, it was a lot to going through that under that visa. And I was not talking about it as well. I only felt comfortable to talk about it when I got the green card, because yeah, I was afraid, I was insecure, and you don't have a timeline.
You don't have a timeline. And as you said, it makes you feel small because you are tied to somebody else's paperwork. And as you said, it's not their fault. Mm-mm. It's the system's fault. And how terrible it is that you bring two people into this country, but you only allow one to be economically independent and to be productive.
Yeah.
So the system is pretty fucked up.
Yeah. And if you compare to the other visas, like I had friends that came here under the L, so they're transferred, and they could apply for, like the spouse could apply for the work permit. And you mentioned that you husband denied an offer from Google. So my husband actually, he did the opposite, not with Google, but he got another offer from another company. And he was at this point that I need a new challenge. So we both agreed. We hadn't started the green card process yet at that point, but we knew that
it was coming.
Delay. Yeah, that would delay. So that was another setback, especially for me. It took us more time to get the green card rather than like to apply for the citizenship.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole process takes 10 to 11 years. I remember coming here in early 2000s. We got our citizenship in 2012 or 13, I forget which one. But it took us almost like 10, 11 years to go through the process. You started something else, content creation. Was that an intentional choice? Was it something you thought, this is the only thing I can do, so why not?
Yeah, so when I knew that I was moving to New York, my mind was just going crazy about the possibilities. I talked to my clients, so I kept some of my clients, and I was working with some fashion brands. So that's how I sold myself, like, listen, I'm going to be in New York, so I can help you with like maybe seeing some trends. I can see work for you. So I kept some clients, and at the same time, I had a lot of ideas of services that I could offer for Brazilian brands, you know. I never stopped, Sadia. I was like, my mind was just going crazy with the possibilities. And remember, like, for the first year and a half, I could work. At the same time, I already had my blog. And when I moved here, I was like, I can start to talk about New York City. So that's how I started my YouTube channel. And I had, like, a lot of plans for that. So it didn't start as something like, is the only thing that I can do, because I was not at that position at that time. But then I was, and I was already doing it. And like looking back, I think that kept my sanity, because otherwise I don't know what I would do.
Yeah, I mean, that's a smarter way to approach it. My husband and I decided to have kids.
That's a good way to keep yourself occupied, right?
No, but it's funny. I shared it with somebody recently and I was like, he was in school. I used to cry a lot. I was miserable. I wanted to go back. I had a life. I had a career. And he was like, you know what? Let's have kids. And we were like in our mid-20s and we decided to have kids. I mean, I'm so grateful for both my daughters, but the decision to have kids was such a irrational, not thought out at the time. When I look back, I'm like, I'm not telling my kids to do that ever. And they're in a very different situation, right? They're born and raised here. But Laura, you started with your content in Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
And then you made a switch to English. And that's not just a language switch, right? It's a mindset switch. I sometimes say there are times when I'm so tired of speaking English. Like, I just want somebody to speak Urdu with me. Like, I'm always looking for people who can. Because the cadence that I have, the way I speak English is so different. I feel like I can't get angry in English. I can get so mad in Urdu. So when you switched from Portuguese to English, what was the personality shift that happened with it?
In the content, you mean?
Yeah, in the content, in mannerism, in the way you were presenting yourself.
Interesting question. I never thought about that. Because at first, what I tried to do was just like, let me do the same things that I'm doing, just in another language. And I think it was working. But yeah, I tried to be myself in English. But of course, I agree with you. There are so many things that are part of your language and that only Brazilians would understand,
yeah,
if I said. So yeah, that's that part. And you have to adapt. And then, wow. That's an interesting question, Sadia. I like that. I never thought about it. I love languages. I speak Spanish. I'm taking French classes. And it fascinates me to see that every language has a rhythm. And you have to learn that in order to communicate yourself better. So I guess that's what I try to do, not only when I'm speaking English, but if I'm speaking Spanish and the little bit that I can speak French, I try to do that. I pay a lot of attention. That it's a topic that fascinates me. So I guess that's one thing. And I guess, like, it's not planned, but sometimes you ended up going like in other directions when you are speaking because you are trying to find the words that sometimes don't come to you naturally.
Oh, yeah. And you constantly code switch, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I said personality. Because it brings out a different me. I sometimes feel I sound calmer. I try to articulate in a way which is more staggered or try to intellectualize things more. But then my real feisty personality comes out in Urdu and Pashto and other languages because that's what I grew up with, right? But why French? What's so fascinating about French?
Well, it's a beautiful language. I don't know, actually, when I was applying for school, one of my options that I tried, because in Brazil, you have the public universities, and that's the place that everyone wants to go. It's the best option. It's not the private university, it's the public, like completely free, 100%. But journalism was so competitive, and you can choose like your first option and your second option. And you know what? I chose French. I was like 17, 18 years old. And I sent a letter to the university to ask, like, do I need to speak French in order to apply for this? They're like, no, you don't. But I wasn't accepted. I didn't pass the exam. So I think that was the first time that I tried something with French. Then my mom, when she was in college, she had a colleague that was a French teacher. And she got like a copy of a book and I started to study by myself. And then I took some classes. I don't know, I just, I just thought it was beautiful. I guess I love the Latin languages. Like if one day I get to a point when I'm very comfortable with French, I want to learn Italian. Someone told me another day that you get to learn so much about a culture when you speak the language.
Absolutely.
And what you're saying about like the English thing, the more you spend time here, the more you learn about the language. I guess you get out of your shell as well. And your personality would be more like true to what it really is. Although it's never maybe gonna be as it is in Portuguese.
Laura, when you came to the US, going back to 2014, you came in the dead of winter. What was the first thing that hit you that blogs or movies had not prepared you for?
Yeah, definitely the winter, because I was packing everything and I was like, this is enough. My mom was helping me because I had to get rid of a lot of things. And she was like, you have no idea. And I was like, Mom, it's not that bad. Because I'm from the south of Brazil and we have winter. Not like here, but we have winter. I was used to it. But yeah, I could barely breathe. The first day that I got here, we had snow by like the knee out of the taxi from the airport. And the next day, like, let's go for a walk. And I swear to you, I couldn't breathe. And it took me years to like master the art of like dressing yourself for winter because I refuse to be like quote unquote ugly. I wanted to be fashion and warm. And yeah, and then I learned like sometimes you cannot have everything.
Have you found your community in New York?
Yes. In a lot of ways, I guess. First, your friends. Most of my friends are Brazilians, but I was also lucky enough to connect with other people. And I think it can be so precious and so interesting to like have more friends from other parts of the world, you know. And even from Brazil, like I never had a chance to connect with someone from São Paulo, for example. And my friends, I don't think I have a friend that is from my state here. So that's something that's like, I guess when you live abroad, your friends are your family. And recently, my building, actually, I see as a community because we got together a year ago. Yeah, a year ago, because a lot of packages were being stolen. And we started this WhatsApp group. And now we have this space to ask like, oh, someone actually asked this last week. Someone has like a can opener that I can use really quick, or, oh, I have this product. Is someone interested? So I love that. It started by something bad, like packages being stolen, but now I know my neighbors and we can sometimes even gossip. And also I live in East Harlem and I love the sense of community in that part of the city. A lot of Spanish people, Latin people in... Just discovering the places. I discovered this place where I can have some clothes to be fixed. And the lady is so nice. And I felt like it brought me back to my time in Brazil when I knew everyone. So I guess when you live for a long time in a neighborhood and you start to find your places and see the same people, that's when you find a sense of community. And also like online, you see how New Yorkers are. And that brings you comfort. You know, I guess in the times that we are living right now, being in New York City, it brings you comfort.
So you have become a trusted guide for people navigating New York City, right? What to wear in February, where to live, how to survive the winters. But there's this seriousness underneath all of it, right? Do you think of yourself as someone who helps people belong in this city?
Yeah, I guess not right now, not just in the city, but because of the work that I've been doing, talking with women living abroad, to belong to the places where they chose to live. By talking about things that sometimes you think that you're the only one going through, and perhaps, I guess, it's the same thing that you are doing here as well, and people don't feel so alone. And I guess you can be an immigrant in any part of the world, and maybe you are an American in Spain, or you are in Argentina, in South Africa, or we are here now. And I'm pretty sure we have our differences in terms of culture, but there are a lot of things that we have in common when you live abroad.
And you created a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Transplants.
Mm-hmm.
There's a metaphor around it, right? People carrying one life while learning to live another.
Yes.
Where did this metaphor come from?
From this in-between place that you occupy when you are an immigrant. Because, well, I told you when we chat that I was about to take my citizenship, my test for the citizenship.
Oh, yes.
So like I took it last week, I passed, and I already
congratulations.
Thank you. And I already have my ceremony scheduled. So I'm going to be an American citizen, right? But I will always be a Brazilian.
What is about Brazil that you miss the most, Laura?
People. My family, my friends. I guess that's the thing. And the good memories. But I try not to romanticize, because I know that the life that I had, I could never go back to that because I'm not the same person anymore. So that's the meaning for me. Because once you leave, you're never going to be the same person anymore. And you're going to be in this in-between place. What I love about this place can sometimes be really confusing, lonely, sad, but it can also be very unique, because I feel like, let me take this part of the Brazilian culture that I love it and keep it here. Let me just, not going to use this other part. Let me take this part of the New York City culture, United States culture, and then I'm this melting pot, you know? I'm a little bit of everything. And like Americans will not fully understand me. Brazilians will not fully understand me. So I guess that's what being a transplant means to me.
You know what I've realized is once you immigrate, you no longer have a home for the rest of your life. You're a nomad in so many ways, right? As you said, you don't fully fit into the culture that you left, not left, but moved on from. And you can never be fully integrated or assimilated in the culture or the place you call home. So it's always like this, as you said, in-between world where when if somebody were to ask me what is home, I could give them like New York is home, Lahore is home, maybe Westchester is home, maybe not. There's nothing affirmative anymore. At least that's how I feel. But your podcast focuses on women. Why women?
I guess men have enough spotlight already. And I guess that reflects what I've been doing over the years. Most of my audience before traveling to New York were women. I really connected to the Brazilian women living in the city. I started this thing where I organize a picnic for Brazilian women every year at Central Park just to connect, because I wanted to use my platform to offer a space for them to connect and making friends. I consider myself a feminist, and I guess also because of my experience as an immigrant and like the whole thing being a dependent. And even, I guess there's another layer to that. Even if you come with a work permit, your husband already has everything figured out.
Do they though?
Maybe not, but in terms of like the work, the career, you still, even if you have a work permit, you have to go through like learning to navigate how to apply for a job, how things work. Like they have something ready for them. Like the work, know what I mean?
You're right, but I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And I always felt that way, right? Mm-hmm. There was a sense of resentment towards my husband because I was like, he uprooted me, although it was a mutual decision. But when I look back, I remember when we came here, and this was like post 9/11 era, and coming from a Muslim country, mm-hmm. and being a Muslim in America was tough, to say the least. And I think he was navigating so much of it as well, and maybe shielding me from a lot of it. He felt like he had to build this life for the both of us. He felt guilty uprooting our life. There have been moments where I am like, maybe I should sit down with him and have a conversation about what was he thinking? What was going through his mind? Have you had that conversation with your spouse to sit down and say, hey, I felt alienated. I felt small, emotionally dependent, financially dependent. What was going through your mind?
I don't recall right now, but yeah, I was always telling him that. He knew that, and he was being very supportive, but he went through some very like bad moments, like burnout in his career. And I think I gave him the support that he needed. I think if I could use a word to define our relationship, it would be like partnership. Recently, we had a conversation about this, like the weight of feeling like they already giving me a visa, a salary, a work. I should not ask for more. Just like silly, if you think about it.
It's absolutely silly, but all immigrants feel that. The sense of gratitude, not realizing that America is a very capitalistic society. The reason you're getting visa and the reason you're getting salary is because you're worth it.
Yeah.
And they don't understand this idea. There is this self-deprecating attitude. Like, I've had numerous conversations with my husband and I'm like, you've made it because you are a smart person. We are living here because we deserve to live here. But immigrants are constantly told to bow down and be grateful. And that feeling doesn't go away, right? Because that doesn't even allow us to fully belong.
Yeah.
Because you can't belong to a place that you don't have a claim.
And now that you're saying that, I remember that he would have some like self-esteem problems and saying like, I'm not good enough. And I was like, look at you. Look where you are right now. Do you think you're not good enough? Do you think you would be here if you were not good enough? So we have those kind of conversations because he was like, nah.
And you and I then become the therapists, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's constant therapy. While we're feeling small, we are trying to uplift our spouses.
Yeah.
Because we don't want them to feel small.
Yeah, of course.
What an irony.
They say go big or go home, but now you can go big at home with the Big Arch on delivery. When you're hungry for something big, like really big, Big Arch for big McDonald's hunger. Order on the McDonald's app. Served from 11 a.m. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.
Laura, you know this. This is how we met. Biot is out in the world. Belong on Your Own Terms app. And there's always something thrilling about creating something and then letting it go. I do feel excited, but I also feel exposed. When you created your first post here in New York or published something real, what was the feeling that you had when you just let it go? What did it feel?
Oof. Well, I don't remember, but I've always
had this like motivation to create, and I need to talk about this, and I need to do this, I need to film this video, I need people to know about these things. But the fear is always there of being judged. And I have so many stories of like hate on the internet. I never try to behave in a way, like the way that people expect me to behave.
Give me an example.
Because sometimes when you are like a woman on the internet creating content, let's say about travel, maybe people will expect me to be cute or maybe always easygoing and answering things that, how can I put this in a way that I'm not going to sound like a bitch? I wanted to give my audience like the tools for them to be independent when they're traveling. Meaning, don't ask me for the answers. Like, don't ask me how is the weather in New York. You know, like those kind of things that drove me crazy over the years. And sometimes I would say like, hey, I cannot tell you how it's going to be the weather in 4 weeks. And instead of ask me how is the weather right now, you can just open the weather app. I try not to be like rude. And I swear to you, I never had the intention of being rude. But sometimes it's just like direct to the point and like, oh my God, you're so rude. You're so rude.
And that was coming from?
From the audience. And I remember at that time, there are other creators like Brazilians and especially guys. They would be like so rude and people were like clapping. I noticed this like, this attitude towards women, like the way
the hypocrisy of it all.
Yeah, they expect the women to behave in a way very, I don't know, tread wife perhaps. And the men can do whatever they want. And like, if I had an opinion, like for, I still haven't visited the Statue of Liberty, like the island. I know it's a shame, but I was like, I don't want to go. I'm happy to see it from the water. And people were like, but you have to go. How can you say that? And I don't agree with you. People get so like passionate about opinions about tourism and travel. Like nobody's going to die. You do you, I do me. Like this is my opinion. You don't need to follow everything, you know. One thing that I remember when the pandemic hit and we're living in New York and you know, like you're in Westchester, but it was awful. And it was April and people were dying. And then people were like asking me like when they're going to open the border so we can travel. And I remember I made like a comment like, I can't believe it that people are thinking about that while we are living here. This is not going to end soon. And the response that I had from people by saying that, I didn't expose anybody. It's like, oh my God, you are just like killing the dreams of people that want to travel. And I was like, here we go.
How do you deal with it now?
You know what? I still have like some trauma from that time. But I guess after years and years dealing with that and therapy and being more confident about what you're doing and trusting yourself and also remembering that people that don't know you, like their opinions about you, that those opinions don't define who you are.
What is one thing about you that your Instagram or blog or your podcast even hasn't captured yet?
Perhaps that I'm very insecure. Very insecure. And so when people say like, oh, you inspire me, I'm like, do I really?
Insecure about what?
About thinking that I'm not doing enough, that's not good enough, that I'm not doing enough.
Is it an immigrant thing or is it a Laura thing? Like, did you feel that way in Brazil as well?
Yes, unfortunately. When you add the layer of the immigration, it's just like another layer, another thing to get like uncomfortable about yourself.
A lot of us are insecure. Right. I used the word small because I do feel that a lot of times. And I was at my therapist's yesterday. Thank God we have therapists. It's this constant struggle to see ourselves as whole beings. And I sometimes think it's also important to reconcile with this idea that insecurity is part of who we are and it's okay. I'm sure a lot of people feel it. But having those conversations is also so important because insecurity is just part of human conditioning at the end of the day. Laura, in the end, if you were to define the United States of America in a word or a sentence, how would you do that?
It's a country of immigrants. Maybe I'm being biased here because of New York, you know, but there's so much diversity here. And I don't like to go to places where everybody looks
the same.
Looks the same. Like sometimes I go to some place and like I tell my husband, have you noticed there's no black people here? You don't see any Latin people here. Yeah, and I grew up in a place like that. Like everybody around me looked the same. And I think you have to allow yourself to get to know other cultures, other people. Because when we don't open our minds, we get too used to this thing that it's only our way of living that is right. Or, you know, and there are so many other ways. And it's expressed through religion and beliefs and your sexual orientation, your gender. And I learned everything, most of those things I learned here, you know. So, yeah, it's a country of immigrants. And you see a lot of Americans saying that as well.
Although they don't believe in it.
Yeah, nobody is from here.
And except actually, for the native population.
Exactly. In Brazil, it's the same too. Like, my family came from Italy and in Germany. And if you go to other parts of the country, it's like Portugal or, you know, Africa. So, yeah, it's a country of immigrants. And I guess it will always be.
Laura, where can people find you, your blog? Can you share that information with us?
Yeah, I guess the best way to find me is on Instagram. It's Laura_Perucci with a CHI. And then you have all my links to my newsletter and to my podcast, which is called Transplants. It's available in all the podcast platforms and on YouTube. Yeah, I'll be happy to connect with other fellow immigrants.
Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this.
You know, every time I sit down with a fellow immigrant, I feel this kindred spirit. There are so many similarities, the insecurities, the code switching, the dissonance between who we are and how we project ourselves. It's refreshing. And it also makes me think there are so many of us, not just in the US, right? People go to all different countries. People immigrate from one country to another. And that's what builds this community of humans navigating the in-between worlds. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend, a family member, a skeptic who thinks immigrants should not be part of the American society. And do me another favor, check out our app, Belong on Your Own Terms, BIOT, at studio.com/Sadia, SAADIA. It's my love letter to immigrant identity and immigrantness. And if you subscribe to it, DM me. Would love to hear your thoughts. This episode was written and produced by me, Sadia Khan. The editorial review is done by Shea Yu. Our sound designer and editor is Lou Raskin. Immigrantly's theme music is done by Simon Hutchinson. Other music by Epidemic Sound. Come back next week for another Immigrantly conversation. Until then, take care.